We do have a quorum. The Government Operations and Elections Committee will come to order. Representative O'Driscoll, did you get a chance to review the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have. I move approval.
Representative O'Driscoll moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. We'll start up with House File 2084, Representative Stensrud. Good morning, Representative Stensrud. Good
morning, ma'am.
Would you like me to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I believe it should go to civil law.
Okay. I will move that House File 2084 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Civil Law Committee. To your bill.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This House file is a bill which will protect the small business owner entrepreneur who provides waste hauling services to our communities throughout the state. And these are job providers who've risked much to be in business for themselves, and they fight every day to grow their business and increase their customer satisfaction. So these are really small business owners who are really pursuing their dreams. And the bill really addresses a situation that if a city decides to mandate to its citizens who will be chosen as a primary trash hauler for their city and forces one of the existing trash haulers to surrender its local customers and give them to one of its competitors, that they basically have a right to be compensated for that. So this is not a, we hear oftentimes that, is this a solution looking for a problem? But these are very real fears of these business owners. And the situation has happened in our state. And we brought some testifiers today who can speak to this issue and how it has impacted their business and what it will mean to them moving forward. And there is a, Madam Chair, an A2 amendment which will address some concerns, I know, for some of the cities.
Okay. Representative Stensrud and members, the A1 amendment, which is not here, did meet the 24-hour rule. The A2 amendment, which is similar, did not meet the 24-hour rule, but we checked with the DFL lead, Representative Nelson, and he was okay to waive the 24-hour rule. And so I think we're okay with that. Would you like to vote on the A2 to get it in the shape that you would like before you had your witnesses?
Yes, that'd
okay.
be great. Thank you.
Do you want to explain the A2 amendment a little bit, and then we'll go ahead and take questions?
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, the A2 amendment addresses a specific concern. If a city is currently under a contract with a preferred vendor for its city, the intent from the start for the author is that it's really for future. If the contract exists with one vendor for a city, and the terms of that contract are for a fixed period of time, maybe a three-year contract. And once that contract expires, we assume that will be sent out to bid for a competitive situation. So if there, another vendor is chosen, the person who was under contract or that business owner would not have a right to get compensation. They would just serve out their contract. And so this is comfort language that addresses that situation. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I just want to take a break here to welcome the ninth grade students from Heritage Christian Academy in my city of Maple Grove. My kids go to a school kitty corner from Heritage Christian Academy. Welcome to the committee. Want to wave to us so we know who you are? Welcome. We always like having kids here to observe our work. Let's see, are there questions to the A2 amendment? Then if we'd be all right, we'll go ahead and vote on the A2 amendment and then bring the witnesses up. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendment does prevail. And then if you'd like to move on to your first witness.
All right. Thank you. Yes, we have two gentlemen involved in the trash hauling industry in our city, Mike Birkenbeck and Willie Tennis.
Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Mike Birkenbeck, and I work for Ace Solid Waste, a local garbage hauling company in Ramsey, Minnesota. This is an issue that we have been dealing with for quite a few years, and there's been ins and outs on the whole issue. The purpose of what I'd like to try to talk to you about today is maybe a little bit of information about how the business works, and that is specifically Ace Solid Waste has been around since 1955. It was started basically by a post-World War II vet, and it continues today as a locally owned business. It was purchased in 1992 by Andy Schweitzer. He happens to be in the audience today, and he lives in New Brighton. Our company services close to 85,000 customers on what's known in the business as subscription service. And subscription service is when a hauler does an agreement, oftentimes verbal, sometimes written, with individual homeowners. And that's really what we're talking about today, is this market, for whatever reason, and it really, again, started post-World War II, has developed as a subscription service market, I would say primarily. There are some cities that have citywide contracts, and the city is actually the customer, but there's a large majority of cities where it is subscription service, where a hauler has developed a relationship with an individual homeowner. And as this issue has come up over the years with various cities, every time it comes up, the city may want to discuss it. Universally, the citizens want to preserve the relationship they currently have. Obviously, we've developed this relationship over very many years, so we want to preserve it, and I'm happy to say our customers want to preserve it also. So when we typically do this in a city, this comes up in a city, it goes out to the citizenry, and universally, citizens want to keep their freedom of choice. And that's really the citizen side of it, and that's really what we've built our business on. And as I said earlier, most of us have spent a lot of years building these businesses, and it's what's been happening is cities will want to do this, and there's a significant loss to us. We've developed these relationships. It's a one-on-one relationship with individual residents, and what happens in the situation of the organized collection is a city will come in and essentially take that business and totally change the model, the relationship, and it makes it very difficult, obviously, for companies that have spent a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of employees to just basically lose their business because the government changed the rules. So we don't think that's fair. We obviously have a significant investment, so there's the monetary side of it, but just in general, we don't think that it's fair for a city to come in and change the rules after we spent all this time and investment and then not be compensated for that. We've created what we've created a significant value in our business. It's happened over the years, and various companies, family-owned companies, have basically, this is their retirement. Some of the smaller companies, we talk about how this is their 401k. Obviously, they've taken significant risks to build these businesses. And when somebody comes in and says, well, we're going to change the rules and you no longer have a business, we don't think that's fair. So we believe that this bill makes it so that at least if a city chooses to take this path, that there is some compensation for the businesses that we have built. In the audience today, we have quite a few independent small hauler businesses and large businesses. One of the things to know about the garbage industry in Minnesota is it is very diverse. There are some large companies involved, but there are also some small companies involved. And we think that part of the reason for that is the model that's out there, and we want to continue that. So I guess those are the general comments that I have. I don't know if anybody has any specific comments or questions on the industry side of things, but I'd be happy to take any questions.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And Mr. Berkepek, have you ever, in your past as a waste hauler, have you ever worked with a city who's gone through organized collection and worked at the beginning stages of an organized collection process?
Mr. Birkbeck.
Thank you. No. The cities that have thought about doing it over the last 15 years, there's been 20 or so cities, and each time that they've wanted to do it, we've talked through it with them and come up with other alternatives, and they did not go to an organized collection system. I have experience with cities that are currently organized and maybe historically always have been, but not specifically in the formation.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll go to the next witness. Mr. Tennis, is it? Welcome to the committee, and if you could just state your name for the record.
Yes. Good morning. My name is Willie Tennis. My brother and I own Tennis Sanitation, brothers Greg. Little history about our company. Our dad and uncle started it back in 1966. They both worked full-time at the St. Paul Union Stockyards, and they started the business out with zero customers. And we've been building it since then. And I started when I was 13, helping my dad and uncle. And then my brother got involved in 78. And then my parents retired in 88. And so, we built the thing from the ground up. And now I have two children involved. My brother has two. And my brother and I are there every day, 12 hours a day minimum. And I personally go out and do sales for residential customers, so I talk to people and let them know about our company. And like I say, we have a lot of, I don't know, it's in my brother and I's blood. We don't hunt, we don't fish, we just work our business, and that's what we're all about. We just try to satisfy our customers as best we can, and that's a reputation we've had for all these years, and we feel that's what's helped us grow by the personal touch that we give. And the current thing that happened to us here is, everybody's well known, is the city of Maplewood decided to go to one hauler. There again, we have a great relationship with the citizens in that city. I mean, they had three public hearings. We had 200 to 300 people come to every meeting. We sent out postcards. They sent them back to the city, tell them they didn't want it. And city felt they wanted to go forward with it. And so with that, unfortunately, it wasn't us. On the street, we can compete with big haulers, small haulers, whatever. But the government is, we can't control that. And so with the loss of Maplewood, that's about 20% of our business. And that's going to affect not only my brother's family and mine, but our employees. So we've never had to lay anybody off before in all our years. And unfortunately, this might be our first time. And so I guess what we're asking for on this bill is just simply, I mean, all the hard work that we've done, at least get something out of it instead of nothing. And so it's kind of a hardship for us, and we just feel we didn't do anything wrong. We've always treated our customers fair and done a good job.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I'm going to ask the same question of Mr. Tennis. It's my understanding, I live in Little Canada, I'm right next, in fact, Maplewood's across the street from me, so I see all the garbage trucks come by my house, and we have organized collection in Little Canada, so we only have one come a week, but Maplewood has all sorts of them coming up my street. I'm just wondering, it's my understanding that when Maplewood first started this process, the haulers were invited to become a part of the process, and maybe subdivide the city into sections so that everyone had the same amount of stops, maybe more localized so that you could save money and the customers could save money. Were you a part of that process, or did you deny to take part of that? It's my understanding that that was offered to the haulers early on in the process.
Mr. Tennis?
Yes, I was involved in all those meetings, but it was never offered to do like Little Canada is, to subdivide each hauler, get a piece of the of what they have, what they currently have. That was never really offered. The thing that they offered in their RFP was they said haulers could join together and try to bid on it. But the way the RFP was set up, there's no way financially that a small hauler could do it, because if you had a bid on zones and you could only get three zones, so a hauler like ourselves, if you had to go out and say buy four trucks for three zones, what would you do with them employees and those trucks for the other 2 days of the week? And it just wasn't feasible. They, in their mind, felt it was a way of helping the small hauler bid on it, but it was impossible.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I just have to say that when we did this in Little Canada, and I was on the City Council at the time, and it was kind of a long, painful process for everybody because change is very difficult. But we zoned our city, and nobody lost any business. In fact, everyone got the same amount of stops that they had before. But the wonderful thing for the haulers is that rather than driving all around the city for X number of stops, now you were in a zone, and your gas was less, whatever fuel you're using was less. And everyone went away with the same amount of business. The customers saw their trash hauling bill go down to about half, but the trash haulers saw their costs decrease dramatically because they were just in one zone rather than all over the city, because that takes time, manpower, and it also takes fuel to run those big trucks all over the city. In fact, on my little street, we had five stops. We had one guy, Horrigan Hauling, who was driving all over the city for five stops. After we organized our collection, he got the five stops just in my street. He could just drive right there, pick up five things, and go to some other city. It was a wonderful thing for him. I didn't know who he was, and so he was a new hauler to me, but he did a wonderful job, and I was so appreciative. He's no longer with us, but I wish he was. He was a wonderful hauler. And BFI was part of the process, and I'm trying to think of the other one. But basically, this is about the streets. And when my city organized collection, we looked at White Bear, we looked at other cities who had done it, and we decided to bring in the haulers early in the process. And they didn't like it, but we told them we were going to do something because we were losing our LGA, but we didn't lose the requirement to maintain streets. And we know that multiple trucks driving on those city streets multiple times causes wear and tear on the street. So this was one of the things that we could do in our addressing the needs of our citizens. And it worked really well. And now when we do a city survey, people just love the system that they have with their organized collection. And it's easier for the haulers. It's less money for the citizens. We didn't do what White Bear did, but we zoned our city. And I think the main thing is that it should work if everyone's part of the process at the very beginning. We shouldn't have to have the state come in and say, you got to do this or you can't do this. To me, this is about local control, where the citizens work with their city and their haulers, and they make it work, and it works well. That's what I call local control, and it worked well for us, and our citizens are thrilled with it. I mean, this was 1989. You'd think we'd have a complaint. I haven't had a complaint, and they go out for bid every year. We have the same haulers. Some go out of business. Some come into the business, but they bid for their zone, and it works well for everyone without the heavy hand of the state coming in and saying, you can't do this. To me, it's about working from the bottom up, working with your citizens and your haulers.
Okay. I didn't see a question there. Are there any questions? Okay. Do you want to move on to your next witness? Thank you, Mr. Tennis.
Thank you.
Mr. Carnival? No?
Yeah, Mr. Carnival's here. Just if there were going to be any questions, I was unable to answer myself.
Okay. Well, I have a few people to testify. I'm wondering if there are any, trash collector businesses that would like to testify in favor or opposition before I get to my list. I know Representative Scalzi said there that the haulers in her area like the system, so I'm wondering if there's anybody here that would like to testify to that's in the business. Okay, not seeing anyone. I will move on to my list then. Looks like I have a whole bunch of cities here to testify. We'll start with Mark Sather from White Bear Lake.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Mark Sather. I'm the city manager of White Bear Lake, and I'm also here as the vice president of Metro Cities. And just a little bit of background. For over the past 37 years, I've had the pleasure of working in three cities in Minnesota, all of which have had a single hauler serving their residents. Two were through organized collection, and one was a greater Minnesota city that had basically one hauler. But so it had a lot of the same advantages of the metropolitan cities or the larger cities that find it necessary to have the organized collection. But I think a lot of our cities have those simply because of their location and the number of haulers. On behalf of Metro Cities, we have strong concerns about the particular bill. On behalf of White Bear Lake, which I'm wearing two hats this evening, I have concern about the bill, but also I've just given a copy of a proposed amendment that seems to address some of our concerns. There's already been reference to White Bear Lake. I've worked in White Bear Lake since 1984. And upon my arrival, we were in the process of going through rebidding our organized collection contract. In that file, I found contracts going back to 1928. So we've been in that business for a long time as a community. But what was interesting is I don't recall exactly which large national-type hauler had the contract in 1984. But it was large. I believe it was maybe Browning Ferris Waste Management, one of those. And as we put it up for bid, there has always been concern with organized collection that it does impact the small entrepreneurs. You've heard a couple of small haulers here, and on behalf of Metro Cities and our city, we strongly defend their rights to continue to do business. But I think you've also heard some conversations already where it isn't necessarily mutually exclusive. When we put our contract up for bid, this is for basically 27,000 people and probably about 9,500 single-family homes that are picked up on a weekly basis. We found that we anticipated perhaps it would be another large hauler, but it was Larry Knutson with Knutson Sanitation at the time. And Larry Knutson was, in fact, the second generation of a small entrepreneur. His father was a victim of polio, traveled the alleys of Minneapolis emptying the old trash cans for a buck a piece or something like that. And out of that, that business was started. Larry was the next generation, took it over. They had a relatively small number of accounts on the east side and the southeast corner of the metropolitan area. He created a better mousetrap. He came up with an idea of a small drop-off. At that time, most of our trash was picked up in White Bear Lake and hauled way to the southeast or southwest parts of the metropolitan area. A lot of time was spent on the highways, filling up the highways in terms of capacity. A lot of fuel spent with each packer that was full. Larry came up with the idea of putting at our public works a small transfer station. So his guarantee under the contract was he would remove all that waste at the end of the day, but rather than his trucks taking about a one-hour trip back and forth each time they were full, he could just take it down to a central location. You know, that innovation won that contract for him. He took it away from the large national competitors. Larry ran that. Then with that, he didn't have the capital to do it, but with his contract, he was able to go to a local lender and said, I have a guaranteed number of contracts, guaranteed payment. And he was able to get the capital he needed to buy the trucks, to hire more people, to expand his business. He then after his contract was then renewed, the state law allows cities to not always have to competitively bid. That's a choice that's left to the local city council. They want to keep it competitive, but they're allowed to negotiate an extension of the contract, which we did. Larry continued to come up with excellent ideas about how he could handle our yard waste and work with the city as it developed its recycling program. At that time, we actually had friendly competition going on within Ramsey County with probably the 17 different cities there in terms of the amount of recycling that could be done. We had the highest because we had certain advantages such as same-day recycling. And so people didn't have to wonder which day is it and so forth. And that all came out of that contract with a small hauler. Eventually, Larry Knutson sold his business to a large company. I think at that time, our records show that it was United Waste or something. They ran out the rest of the contract. The council put it up for bids. And a small contractor, again, from St. Paul, Michael Hines and his brother had Gopher Sanitation. They came in and competitively against Waste Management, BFI, and some of the large ones, took that contract because they, too, had some good ideas. They ran it for several years and then sold theirs again to another company. Next year, we are up for bids, and the city council has already chosen, after extending the contract, that they'd like to bid it again. And I think that that should be a choice left to the local government. And because we also do the surveys, as Representative Scalzi did, and get really, really high satisfaction levels from our residents. I'd like to just talk a little bit about some of the advantages to cities. And Representative Scalzi did mention some of them. You got one truck going down the street a week. A garbage truck loaded is probably one of the heaviest vehicles that goes down a residential street other than maybe a school bus. And if you have three or four or five of them coming down a street each week rather than one, there is additional wear and tear. As I mentioned, same-day collection, because under our contract we require that, and it makes it easier, and our really high volume of participation in recycling we think is attributed to that. Just the aesthetics in our neighborhood. One day a week do people put garbage down on their curb rather than a few people here, a few people there. We have incentive pricing so that we can get greater participation in recycling by actually the more you throw out, not just it goes up exponentially. Our council through use of our recommendations of an environmental commission that we have in the city has recommended that, and it has really lowered the volume of waste that is generated in our city. Cost is not always important, but it is in this particular case, and we have extremely low rates, and as a result of the efficiency that come. There's advantages to the hauler also. Guaranteed payment under our contract. They don't have to go around if somebody doesn't pay them. The city actually does the billing. We send quarterly bills out to our residents for water and sewer, and on that is their solid waste. Monthly, our contractor is guaranteed a payment from the city. If somebody doesn't pay, the law allows us to put that on their property taxes. So the contractor doesn't have to worry about the so-called deadbeat or somebody who isn't paying them. They have the efficiency that was brought up before. Rather than travel all around, they just go down the block. If they have a changeover or change in personnel, there isn't a complex route map or anything. They just say, here's the city in five different districts. We pick up one-fifth of the city each day. And, you know, the blue day, the red day, the green day, just go down these streets and pick up everybody. You don't have to worry even about the address. Less fuel, and there's a lot of other advantages. You may very well know that cities are obligated to guarantee that all of their residents have garbage collection. That's set forth in Statute 115A.941. And you know, I'm not sure how many cities and/or regulatory groups that are overseeing cities are looking at that, but we're bound by law to make sure. With a contract like this, it allows cities to comply with that. And then I think some other points were brought up about the cities of North St. Paul and Little Canada. There are other ways of doing it. I'm not exactly sure which options were looked at in Maplewood. However, I do remember because North St. Paul worked in close consultation with us, and they basically had four principal haulers at that time, and they all generally had about the same number of customers, but they were spread throughout the city.
Mr. Sather, could you start to wrap up? We have several people that would like to testify, and you've been up for about 10
more
minutes.
Seconds. They simply divided the city into quads. Each individual basically got the same amount. But if there was maybe one hauler that had three or four or five under this proposed bill, they could bring an action against the city to sue them, and you know, under inverse condemnation. And I think that would have a huge impact. Plus, you'll be creating, I think, a separation between cities that have advantages of this nature that I've described versus those who don't. So you effectively will be denying many cities of the ability to look at that. And that's the end of my remarks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I have a few questions. You mentioned, and Representative Scalzi mentioned the same thing, and it made me curious. You said it's good for the haulers, and I'm wondering where the haulers are to testify in opposition to the bill. There's been no one that's contacted me to testify, any small haulers. There have been several that are in support of the bill, and I'm just wondering if you have any reason why you think that they would not be here to show their opposition.
Madam Chair, I don't represent the haulers, but you know, they may not be aware that you're looking at the legislation.
Okay. And I also have a follow-up question. You did mention that, you know, you talked about how good this is for the city and the advantages. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what you think the advantages to the homeowner, because I'm a homeowner and I like choosing who my trash hauler is. I'm very sensitive about this. I would have been one of the 200 or 300 people that came to talk about that. And I'm just wondering if you could give some thought to what the advantage is to the homeowner who want to choose instead of having the heavy hand of government choose a monopoly for them.
Madam Chair, I think you could take all of my remarks and where I said it was good for the city, you could transpose the city to its residents. But I, too, have been a resident of all three of the cities that I've described that have had it. And I feel that as an individual homeowner that I've benefited because I've had very good service, very good cost. Somebody said it takes away my choice or my right to choose. And we said, yes, it does. But in our contract, we actually impose certain things. We say, why would you want to choose? You'd want to have a good price. You'd want to have good service. We can virtually guarantee probably the best price you'll ever have available. But secondly, what about the bad service? And under our contract, if for some reason I get missed today, I can call and under the contract, that contractor is responsible, come back and make that pickup that day. If they miss me twice in a row, they get fined $15 and I get an apology letter from the city with a $15 check in it. So those are just examples. Plus, when I drive down my street is cleaner. Once a day or once a week, I see the garbage cans out there rather than five times a week. Once a week, I've got a garbage truck coming down rather than several times. So I think as a homeowner, I benefit quite a bit from it.
Well, I thank you. I would argue that as a homeowner, when I've been dissatisfied with my hauler, I just cancel them and I go to a different hauler, and I get good service that way. Anyway, I think... Do we have any additional questions? We have several people that want to testify. So, and for the additional witnesses, we are in limited time and have several people that want to testify, several cities, it looks mostly. If you could just try to wrap it up in a couple minutes, because I have a feeling we'll be saying a lot of the same thing. Next on the list is Dave Osberg from the city of Hastings. And if you could just identify yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Dave Osberg. I'm the city administrator in Hastings. I've had the pleasure of being the city administrator since March of 1989. I'm also here as also a member of the League of Minnesota Cities Board of Directors. And I'll defer much of some of the same comments that my colleague Mark Sather had. I just want to share a little bit of our story in Hastings. Some of my concern was alleviated when I did walk in and realize I believe it's the A2 amendment that you have before you that in many respects will preclude lawsuits or inverse condemnation being filed for any city who goes back to or currently has organized collection. Seemingly that risk will be eliminated, so I'm appreciative of what that appears to be before you today and in the future. We've had organized collection in the city of Hastings for an awful long time. I've been there since March of 1989, and I think it's at least 10 or 15 years prior to that, and I will say that in many respects, the system works very well. We have very few complaints from our residents. I think it's also safe to say that over the course of my tenure working in the city of Hastings, the haulers, the hauler that we've had and folks that have been involved in the system that we have in Hastings have been very supportive of it. Some of those folks are in this very room, that when we do have an organized collection system, folks, I believe, are very supportive of it. I've never been in a situation where we've gone from open collection to organized collection, so I can't speak to that in the context of my career as a city administrator. So I would encourage you to support the elements that are in the amendment that, in a sense, grandfather those cities like White Bear and Hastings and currently have organized collection so that we're not in a situation where we'd have to be locked into our current hauler. We do go out for proposals once every 6 years, have a pretty robust system that we solicit proposals and do a pretty good job of getting feedback from the haulers. So I would support at least the concept that you have before you on the amendment that would grandfather those of us cities who do have organized collection. Thank you.
Yep, and we already have passed that, so that if the bill goes forward, it will include that. Any questions for Mr. Osberg? Thank you very much. We'll move on to the next witness, Craig Johnson from the League. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson, representing the League of Minnesota Cities. I think you got very complete coverage of the details of how this works in a city from the previous two testifiers. I want to talk a little more broadly. I do appreciate the author's amendment today. That does alleviate some of our concerns with the legislation. But I want to be clear. You heard Mr. Sather mention 115.841. That is the statute that requires a city of a population of 1,000 or more have garbage service enforceable contracts for service for every resident in their community. And it specifically says, to comply with this section, a city or town, so also townships, may organize collection, provide collection, or require by ordinance that every household or business have a contract. We have cities that do all three of those. We have a number of cities, very large cities, that actually have a municipal solid waste service. They provide the service. When the city expands, the service expands with the border of the city. City of St. Cloud would be an example, municipal garbage service there. And City of Shakopee also has a system where they extend the municipal service as they extend their municipal service territories for other utilities. Under this, if that person previously was getting solid waste service, which by law they were from somebody, there's now an inverse condemnation claim, simply because the city expanded its other utility services into that area. And it would end up with cities with patchworks where parts of the city fell under the city's existing utilities, other parts of the city did not and had to have a separate solid waste hauler or multiple ones licensed to operate in that neighborhood. We really feel that's a very bad policy. I would point out that there is a very, very thorough, painful to read, and even more painful to go through process that a city has to go through to establish organized collection. It's over 6 months long. It costs tens of thousands of dollars and huge amounts of time, both staff time and in public meetings. And in the last 20 years, one city has gone all the way through that successfully and at the end decided they wanted to do organized solid waste collection. This is not something that is constantly putting solid waste haulers out of business in this state. The cities are finding solutions that work. This is one of the options. It's worked well in cities that have chosen to do it. One additional city has chosen to do it. And yes, it did have an impact on some haulers. But I would add that the way that most local governments have to do business and the way we've decided it's good for local government to do business is on a low bid basis. That's the way that we have a RFP that goes out. We have a free market attempt. Your business tries to compete with other businesses for a low bid. We build a bridge in town. We don't give a piece of the bridge project to everybody who put a bid in, regardless what their bid is. The low bid gets the bridge. And if you win the bid for one bridge, it doesn't mean you get all future bridges. So similarly, when the city decides that they need to take a role in managing solid waste collection to meet the requirements of state statute, we think they need this tool at their disposal as well, so that if they choose organized collection, yes, there's a process that has to be gone through to establish the need for that and to look at other alternatives during the process. But at the end, it is the local government's decision of what will work best for their community. Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy to try and respond to questions.
Mr. Johnson, just with your analogy about the bridges, wouldn't it be more like if several different companies already started building the bridge and invested a lot of money in it, and then they were told they couldn't finish the bridge as opposed to a new proposal? Because my understanding is a lot of these builders or a lot of these haulers already had a significant amount of business, and so I don't know that your analogy was exactly right. If you could, I mean, am I on the right track here?
Madam Chair and members, it may not be a flawless analogy, but it would be similar to if you had multiple bridges going into your city and the city decided, you know what, it's more efficient for us to have one contractor do all the bridge projects that are going on and put the bid out that way. That would be a better analogy than the one I made, so you're right. It wasn't perfect.
Thank you. We have some questions here. Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson, and I know that several of the previous testifiers as well, you know, a lot of the testimony has been focused a lot around, you know, a city being able to organize. And, you know, I think some of that is due to the amendment, you know, perhaps coming in later than not. And I think both the previous testifiers, you know, were grateful that we were moving in that direction. But I just want to make the point here. I mean, this bill in no way is amending 115A, where we're saying a city cannot organize. What we're saying is, if you organize and you are taking a private business's private property, which is their book of clients, and you are going to take that property and give it to a competitor, that you need to compensate them for that. That's what we're talking about here. In no way are we saying that a city in this context can't organize their waste hauling system. But what we are saying in this bill is that if we are going to take a book of business that, like Mr. Tennis said, he goes out, he beats the pavement to get a book of business, a city comes in and says, by a city's action, which they can do and can still do under this, we're going to take your book of business away and give it to a competitor of yours, that they need to be compensated for that. So again, in no way are we trying to say that a city cannot move forward by organizing. Clearly, there looks to be some benefits here. But what we need to make sure that we're doing is not taking a private business's private property with a book of clients and giving it to a competitor of theirs with absolutely nothing for them to gain, and they have everything to lose in those scenarios. And that is something that a city, in my opinion, should not be able to do, which is clearly come in, take a book of business away, give it to a competitor, and, you know, tell them to hit the bricks.
Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, Representative, you're correct that this legislation does not prohibit a city from doing organized collection. It does make the financial liabilities potentially large enough or unknown enough to make it that it would be virtually impossible to move forward in that route for most communities, unless you were dealing with a very small displacement. But if you're looking at having, you know, only a couple of haulers in your community and you used to have five, it's not very realistic in most cases to try and figure out what that liability would be. Local governments regularly have to do contracts to provide services for their community, whether it's for the operations of government itself, who sells the trucks to the city, who sells the plows, who sells the salt. We do it all the time, and it's part of the low bid process, is that some people are going to be beneficiaries of winning the low bid process to provide service to the government. And if that's what it takes for the city to be able to manage its statutory obligation, we just want to make sure that it's manageable. And we really feel that with that unknown financial liability hanging over the city, we would have a very, very difficult time considering this as even a potential for management.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, Representative Sanders, I wanted to kind of take a little different approach to how we look at this. Under the law, under 115A, there are three actors here. It isn't just the business and the consumer, because in between the business and consumer, in all cases, is a city government. The law says that the city has to provide for or ensure that there is collection service for every business and every household. So if this was purely a market transaction, you would have some businesses and some households that would have collection services and others wouldn't. And it would probably be the unprofitable collection routes or locations that wouldn't have service available, or it would be at a very high price and people might not be able to pay it, I guess. But the current statutory scheme automatically and without exception puts the city in between that transaction. So it's, there is no hauler right now in a residential neighborhood or in for businesses that has a book of business that is not governed or unregulated by the city. They all have it. And what we're talking about is the way that the city organizes that or doesn't organize it or gets involved in it or doesn't get involved in it. But we've already crossed the bridge. We've already crossed that threshold. The city is in the middle of that transaction. It isn't just between Representative Pepin and the hauler. The city has to make sure that the haulers are available everywhere. So I think in that scenario, calling a change in the approach that the city takes to ensure that everyone has collection, a taking, is a pretty radical and extreme application of the concept of a taking. And creating a reverse condemnation action based on that, it seems to me, opens up a lot of questions in other areas of law and other areas of policy where we could be creating a taking every single time a business loses profitability because of some government action. It's not as though we're depriving them of the ability to conduct their business entirely. Even a painful 20% loss of revenue doesn't mean that the business can't survive. So these things are all, the city is in the middle of this already, and changing their approach to how they regulate, how they provide for that collection is contemplated in statute. And it seems to me that creating a taking because a business loses part of its customer base is exactly what's contemplated in the law, and certainly doesn't amount to a taking. And haulers who entered into those relationships did so on the basis of the existing law. So, I don't know. I don't really have a big opinion about you know, whether the city of Maplewood or whether organized collection is done in the right way, but to go the route of calling this a taking, I think, is pretty extreme. And if there are legitimate concerns about the existing process, we should narrow that down and not focus on this kind of cause of action route. I mean, it's good for lawyers, and I'm always pro that, but you know, we're applying something that a property right enforcement mechanism that really has no place in this context, in my opinion.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you know, I appreciate that point. I guess we just come at it from different angles, and I agree that local governments are obviously regulating that industry as government regulates almost all industries. My point of view is saying that if you have trash haulers, which is what this bill is discussing and talking about in this chapter of law, has a book of business that they have earned, that they have worked for, they've acquired clients, they're servicing those clients and servicing those clients under a contract, and through no force of the market due to direct competitors in the industry, a local unit of government is coming in and saying they can no longer have those clients, they must give them up for an organ, you know, in that direction. So I just come at it from a different point of view. I use the word taking because that's what inverse condemnation really is saying, is that term is used to say that government is taking private property and using it for public use. That's why I use that term. And I do see how it fits in this scenario. I'm not saying, again, that a city cannot do this or that the city should not be able to organize their waste hauler industry. That's another conversation for another day. All I'm saying is that if you're going to do so, then I do think you need to compensate businesses who have spent years, if not decades, if not generations, building a client base in a city and through no direct competition from the real marketplace are losing their book of business to a local unit of government and subsequently a competitor through that means. So I do see that as needing inverse condemnation. Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Winkler?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess just a follow-up point is it isn't the private marketplace. It hasn't been as long as the statute has been in place. It's a kind of pseudo-monopoly. It's a utility, essentially, that we have that is privatized partially. But the requirement that everyone has collections means that there is no such thing as a business that's going out there and getting clients through its own hard work and pluck. It means that all customers have to be served. So there's a guaranteed book of revenue that the state is providing, and we have a system that allows cities some flexibility to decide how that's divided up according to local needs. But the guaranteed market of collection at all these places is something that the state is mandating. It's sort of like Obamacare, you know. There's this mandate, basically, that there's a certain amount of revenue coming in because everybody has to have it or it has to be provided to everyone. And then there's some method for organizing how these things are allocated. And I'm sure the cities wish I hadn't said that, but it's the same principle, and it was a Heritage Foundation idea originally. But the idea, you know, we're creating extra revenue by requiring collection everywhere. And the cities have the ability to organize it. So there's not like there's this kind of private marketplace that existed, and then the city came in and took business away. The city set up the market. They decided what bounds that market could be organized under. It's been around for a long time, and everybody who's in that market has been living within that field of competition that the city has set out. And the city should have the right to change that competition and to best service residents. That's how state law requires it. So nothing is being taken that wasn't given in the first place.
Thank you. Well, Representative Winkler and Representative Sanders, all this talk is making me wonder if the mandate should be there in the first place and if hauling trash is a legitimate function of government. But that too may be a different discussion for a different day. Representative Winkler?
If you wanted to carry a bill saying that people didn't have to have their garbage hauled away, I think you should do that.
Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, I have some comments as well, but since we have other testifiers, I can wait until after they're done. I'd still like to be on the list.
Okay. Let's go to Dave Benke from the MPCA. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Benke. I'm the director of the Resource Management and Assistance Division at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We've handed out a fact sheet of analysis that the agency did on organized collection. I believe you have that in your packets. We found in that study that organized collection consistently results in not only lower costs to the consumers, also has higher recycled materials collection capture rates, reduces noise pollution, road wear, air emissions, and fuel consumption. Those benefits are something that obviously is of concern to the local community. Organized collection is not an easy process to go through, as a lot of folks have already said, but to take advantage of the benefits that are in the study that I pointed out, they need to go through a process, one that's not only time-consuming, but it's onerous. And all the units of government that take that on have to take special care, especially when they're taking action that affects existing businesses or contracts, to make sure that they document the solid need and the public purpose of that action. The process does that currently in the way it's set out. And as you've heard, it resulted in one organized collection out of 20 years of attempts to do it. The other thing is that the changes proposed today, even with the amendments, will make organized collection of trash in the future nearly impossible. You've got to guarantee an outcome for someone whether they participate or not. It seems to me that you would actually hurt the process by not bringing the haulers to the table. The haulers in this state have been part of the system. We need them as part of the system. They have offered us a lot of innovation. But if you don't bring them to the table to have the discussion about how we can make those changes, they're guaranteed a win either way, then it doesn't seem like the process is going to be advantage, you know, to have that conversation. If out of 20 attempts in the last, only one has succeeded in terms of organized collection, it seems like alternatives have been found. And alternatives have been found through that dialogue and discussion. I'll let you take a look at the study that we've got. If you want to look at more information on it, it's on our website. But those are my comments for this morning.
Thank you. Any questions for this witness in particular? Okay, thank you. We'll move on to the next witness, Trudy Richter. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Trudy Richter, and I'm here on behalf of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board. That's a six-county metro joint powers board, and Tuesday is board day. And so on behalf of the commissioners, I am extending their apologies for not being able to be here today. But they asked me to come and share their concerns about this proposal and the public policy it could create for this state. The Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board actually manages approximately 2 million tons of the waste that's generated in the state. It's the largest generation area of the entire state. And you're probably wondering, you've been hearing from cities, why are counties concerned? The Solid Waste Management Act actually puts the obligation on counties to manage solid waste management services through the adoption of their solid waste master plans. You'll note this legislation goes to all solid waste management services. So the counties, in fact, are very concerned. Garbage and its management here in the state, which includes recycling, resource recovery, proper collection, disposal, is a $1 billion primarily private industry. This makes Minnesota quite unique because in many parts of this nation, the public is much more involved. They buy trucks, they buy other things in order to be able to, as government, run and operate the services. But here in Minnesota, we in fact have a long history of government working closely with the private sector, and in turn, the private sector doing good work and reaping the financial benefits. The coordinating board and counties and cities work together in these partnerships. And in true American style, many businesses have been set up and make the investments and handsome returns on those investments. Those are private businesses. However, typically it's the counties and the cities that have to step in and perform some of those solid waste management services that create the problems and additional costs, such as managing taxpayers' household hazardous waste and recycling problem materials. Don't make money doing that, so that's left to government to have to do. So why are local governments in this business? It's because the state has mandated, as the chair indicated, that they are to be responsible for this to protect the environment and public health. It's a basic public health function of local government. In addition, please be aware that the state and federal government has made every resident and business responsible and liable for their garbage. Haulers and other private solid waste management providers do not take on this risk by virtue of offering the service. It's not their private property. It remains the liability of the generator. So because government is mandated to plan for solid waste management, government has been given some tools. And the one you're talking about today, related to organized collection, is just one of many tools. This bill, however, would result in eliminating government's ability to protect its residents and businesses because any service they could offer could perhaps result in an inverse condemnation claim. This gives haulers and other private providers of solid waste services, recyclers and other vendors, the right to hold taxpayers hostage. Cities and counties would face significant liability if they wish to enter the public-private partnership and the most free market manner possible, request for proposals, competitive bid. Government will be precluded from seeking improved, cost-effective services or technology advancements to better protect the environment and public health. And inverse condemnation basically creates the status quo, regardless of public health, regardless of the environment, or cost savings that can be realized by Minnesota taxpayers. This is not the American way. It's not the Minnesota way. And it's not what the Minnesota Solid Waste Management Act, adopted in 1980, contemplated. It's a very slippery slope. Note, this is in Chapter 117, the eminent domain statute. This is not part of 115, solid waste. What's next in terms of going after another government function? Thank you.
Thank you. Let's move on to the next witness. David Perkins from Olmsted County Government. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just remember to identify yourself.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dave Perkins. I've been an Olmsted County Commissioner for 9 years, and I'm in my 10th year right now. I'm also here on behalf of the Minnesota Resource Recovery Association, which I chair, and as counties across the state share concerns with the inverse condemnation language, I'm also here on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties. The legislator gave the counties the obligation to manage solid waste and provide valuable tools to do the work. I, along with county commissioners around the state, worked with their cities and townships to implement the 1980 Solid Waste Management Act. The bill under consideration takes away an important tool for us to use. The proposed legislation would hinder the ability of local units of government to develop and sustain economically viable, environmentally protective solid waste management systems. Local governments have significant waste management responsibilities under Minnesota law and historically worked very hard to meet these responsibilities. House Floor 2084 would make this more difficult by placing unneeded restrictions on local government ability to safely and efficiently organize solid waste collection services when the local decision makers deem that is best interest of their constituents. Organized collection is needed in some instances to further the development of more desirable waste processing and disposal options and help limit the long-term liability of local governments. The Association of Minnesota Counties opposes inverse condemnation legislation that would restrict the ability of local governments to implement organized waste collection. Minnesota taxpayers have invested a lot of money in solid waste management industry. They also help bail out industry for past mistakes by paying what has been estimated to be ultimately $500 million to clean up public and private sector landfills throughout the state, creating a system in which governments are less able to respond to new science or technology changes. Sets taxpayers up for potentially a big bailout in the future. Olmsted County has signed long-term waste delivery contracts with the haulers who are operating within its boundaries. And I believe a primary reason for haulers signing the delivery contract was that the county has the ability to let bids for waste collection services. Our haulers in Olmsted County tell us they like the contracts for delivery to our system and puts them in an even playing field, allowing them to fairly compete for services with all have equal disposal costs, bidding of garbage hauling, or sectioning. A jurisdiction is the essence of free market capitalization. Low bid wins and local householders save money. The bid process on the threat of its use is an incentive for high quality service and low prices. This bill would put non-competitive forces into the market and potentially increase the cost to our constituents. If the legislator wants counties to continue to provide sound solid waste management program as mandated in 115A, we need to be provided the necessary tools to get the job done. This bill larger implicates that go beyond solid waste management systems. This has concept expands beyond solid waste. It could have adverse impact on a wide variety of local government activities. What would be the next special interest that would point to this bill and ask for similar treatment? What will be the next thing the government does for the public good, perhaps what the state has mandated the county to do, to be challenged? What will be the cost to taxpayers to compensate private companies? Counties across the state feel that the bill sets a dangerous precedent, and we ask that you oppose this bill. I would like now to turn the testimony over to John Helmers, Olmsted County Environmental Resource Director. Thank you.
Thank you. And we just have a couple witnesses left, and then I'd like to close off testimony and move on. We do have several other bills on the agenda today. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself for the day.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you regarding House File 2084. My name is John Helmers. I'm the Director of Environmental Resources Department of Olmsted County, and I also serve on the Executive Board of the Solid Waste Administrators Association, an affiliate of the Association of Minnesota Counties, and I'm here to present their views as well. Local government units were given the authority to organize waste collection services and the responsibility to provide for waste management programs within their regions under the Waste Management Act 115A and Public Health 145A statutes in order to provide for the health, safety, and welfare of its citizens and to protect the environment. Solid waste administrators feel this bill could hinder local governments from fulfilling those responsibilities under those laws, including specifically their obligations to protect and regulate public health, welfare, and safety by developing environmentally protected waste management systems. This bill could also prevent local units of government from protecting the financial welfare of their residents and local businesses through cost-effective collection systems and by restricting the number of garbage trucks on roads and streets in order to reduce wear and tear on those streets. The language of this bill raises many questions, and some terms used do not have legal definitions. Without knowing what mixed municipal solid waste services is defined as, could potentially impact a number of areas that counties contract in: collections, processing, landfilling, household and small business hazardous waste collection programs, to name a few. The words direct and indirect also raise questions. Dodge and Olmsted counties have, over the past 25 years, built in and expanded an integrated solid waste management system which properly manages solid waste generated in the counties. By using an integrated system, all types of waste can be disposed of in a beneficial, environmentally safe manner that is cost-effective. House File 2084, should it become law, could potentially redirect county staff and local dollars away from properly managing solid waste. Instead, a county would use local resources to defend against lawsuits resulting from this bill, and failing that, cause local tax dollars to be paid to private businesses as compensation for those businesses' failure to compete in the marketplace. Olmsted County has, and will continue to do so in the future, negotiate with private haulers to bring waste to its facilities. Under our system, all of the haulers are treated equally. Each is charged the same fees for using the system, and they properly pass those disposal fees on to their customers. However, since the fees we charge are higher than regional landfills and some large haulers own their own landfills, those haulers could undercut the smaller haulers by using their landfill instead of county facilities. The county has no control over the quality of these landfills, and if they ever needed to be cleaned up, the county would most likely be liable as a deep pocket. Our county board made the decision to manage these risks by keeping waste generated within the county and limiting any risks for future cleanups to its own facilities. Since our tipping fees and services charge pay for all county solid waste services and no property taxes are used to pay for these comprehensive services, they are necessarily higher than the market. The county needs some alternatives to have a bargaining position. Right now, a local government has the right to go out for competitive bids for an entire jurisdiction or sections of a jurisdiction, contracting where the solid waste is to be taken. Each hauler currently working in the area would have the ability to provide a bid themselves or join in a joint venture with other haulers to provide a bid. If this bill becomes law, a hauler could use the threat of inverse condemnation. The county has to buy them out to prevent the county from using a contract with all the haulers to use our system. Thank you for hearing our concerns. This concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. We're on to our last witness, Tam McGee. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just state your name for the tape.
Yes, my name is Tam McGee, and I am speaking as a resident. I believe many of you are from outstate. I would like to speak as a resident of the metropolitan area. I live on a street that goes nowhere that has 35 homes. On an average day in the summer, because my city authorizes four different haulers to be licensed and everyone chooses their own, I have four different garbage haulers on my 35 home street. I also have my recycling truck. So in the winter, I have approximately 10 truck trips down my street every Friday. In the summer, that number jumps to 18, because the old garbage trucks, the guys went down the middle of the road when I was young, and they worked each side. Now, because of the arms that they have, they drive, so it's a two-pass. And my computation, given the studies that I've seen, if a garbage truck is equal to approximately 1,200 car trips, that would mean that in the summertime, my road has essentially 17,000 cars. In the wintertime, about 9,000 car trips on a street with only 35 homes. I will tell you that as a person who is home during the day, the garbage collection starts in the morning and finishes late in the afternoon. And those haulers that are going from home to home, such as the recycling, because we have only one recycling hauler, that truck moves slowly and stops at each house. The garbage trucks, on the other hand, go from home to home, and if there's a long distance between those homes, they pick up their speed, and it becomes a danger. We have children, we have the elderly, and we have garbage trucks, and we have curves. And this is dangerous. It also is a pollutant. And so I certainly support all of the arguments that I've heard sitting here this morning from the cities, why they would like to do this. I also listened carefully to Representative Scalzi's explanation of how it was handled in Little Canada, and for my community, I see that that is the optimum way to handle these things, and I don't think that it's impossible to have some type of legislation that would say that if you are going to go to this hauling format, that you make some accommodation for those haulers that are licensed in your area by giving them one area to work. And I don't have a problem with that. I do have a problem with the inability of cities to be able, my city, to be able to organize trash hauling so that we can get a better price, so that we can have minimal street damage, so that we can have minimal large trucks on our streets, and so that we can have a safe, quiet neighborhood. So. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we've made it through the list of witnesses. I do have a couple names. Representative Simon, you've been patient. Back to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Stensrud. I appreciate what you're trying to do here. I assume you just want to help some honest people trying to make an honest buck, and I appreciate that. But I'd look at this a little bit differently, and you know, you can treat these as rhetorical questions or you can answer them, but no one has a right to a government contract. And what I'm afraid here, the spirit of the bill, is that they do, and that when they lose it, they need to be compensated. And what I'm worried about is the slippery slope, as others have said. You know, why stop with waste haulers? Who else is next? I know in St. Louis Park, where I'm from, the city deals with many vendors. Are we now setting up an example whereby in the future, if they lose a contract, they too will be able to sue the city? I'm not sure that that's something we want to do. The next thing is, I'm not sure we'd ever impose this same burden on the private sector. If Best Buy or Cub Foods or U.S. Banks or any of our homegrown large Minnesota companies had contracts, we would never say that if they ditched a vendor, that that vendor would be able to sue them, despite the fact that they too have a book of business and they too might want to service Best Buy or Cub Food or U.S. Bank. I just don't think we'd ever do that. And so I'm wondering if you care to comment, why the distinction here? Why is it different? Why wouldn't we or shouldn't we impose this on Best Buy or on any private entity? And then finally, this whole thing sort of reminds me of a conversation I had a few years ago with a former school superintendent in our area. He said, you know, I get frustrated sometimes because we're always told in government, be entrepreneurial. Go out there, do something different, you know, be efficient, be more effective, do more with less. And so what he did in Hopkins School District is the district started a coffee shop. Its own coffee shop in the education center there on Highway 7. You know it well, the Eisenhower Community Center. And it did very well. And then he got a lot of guff from organized business interests who said, how dare you poach our customers and our clients? And he felt at least like it was a no-win situation. Because when they are entrepreneurial and when government does get involved to try to make things better for its employees or its workers or give them a better deal or a better price, or its residents or its constituents of some kind, then it's accused of somehow poaching private industry. When it doesn't, then it's government can't do anything right and government's inefficient and government isn't entrepreneurial. And I know the analogy isn't perfect here because, as Representative Scalzi has tutored me, having been on a city council a long time, and I know Representative O'Driscoll and others have been as well, this isn't necessarily an income stream for the particular municipality. At least in her case, it wasn't. So it's an imperfect analogy. But I've thrown a lot at you, but you care to comment about that? It just seems like sometimes there's a double standard, both as to what we're willing to impose on private industry and then what we ask of government sometimes in terms of being nimble and quick and entrepreneurial. But then on the other hand, when they choose to do those things, it sometimes looks as if we're seeking to punish them.
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Simon. No, I think those are reasonable questions. I think if you look at private industry, you know, Best Buy has a contract with a vendor. But if government comes in and says, Best Buy, you can't use that, I guess I would think that was more of an analogy where government would come in and say, all right, that contract we don't care about with that vendor, we're going to make you go to another vendor. Well, there are contractual penalties built in with that in private industry. So if Best Buy decides to break their contract with a private vendor, you know, there are consequences to that, and their obligation with a private vendor, you know, there are consequences to that, and their obligations under that. I would probably defer to your contractual expertise, you know, being a lawyer. But I think we heard a lot of the testifiers, you know, talking about protecting the government and protecting the cities, and I didn't hear any testimony except for, you know, a couple of business owners saying, "Who's looking out for the people? Who's looking out for the small business owners?" And really, that's what this bill is for. It's to protect, you know, a small entrepreneur who's just trying to eke out a living and grow his market share so that he can pass on his business to his family or his kids or get a retirement out of this. And we just want something that's fair. And I'm absolutely happy to work with any of the testifiers. They came from a lot of different municipalities. If there are specific words or phrases or in that we could work with to make this bill better before it, you know, as it moves along, I am more than happy to do so.
Thank you. Representative Simon, do you have a follow-up? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And these are just, I guess, committee comments as I ruminate on this bill.
You know, this is somewhat analogous, I think, to what governments must have gone through about 120 years ago when we had electric power companies were out peddling their wares and running wires everywhere. And at some point they decided it would probably be good just to have one set of transmission lines through your backyard and one set of wires down the street. And I think this is kind of what we've are facing this morning. And actually, this bill, it strikes me as kind of an after-the-fact trying to fix a problem that I agree may exist, but I've got a suggestion, Representative Stensrud, in just a moment, as soon as I'm done telling you why I think it's going to be a good suggestion. We've carved out, and previous legislatures did this, at least as recent as 1991, probably more longer ago than that, when we came up with the idea that everybody had to have trash service, refuse service in this state, and we pushed it down, thankfully, to the lowest level of government, city or county, to do that. And I think that was probably wise. Lord, I'd hate to have an agency here and responsible for refuse trucks running down and up and down every street in Minnesota. That would just be a bureaucracy I wouldn't even want to begin to mess with. I wouldn't want to chair that committee. But somehow we've mandated that this has happened. That ship has sailed. That's already the law of the land. So that, I think, really represents is what we're dealing with here. Now, how we've accomplished that over the years is there's been a whole bunch of folks that have sprung up to accomplish that mandate, and that's been a good thing. I think that's been very healthy for us. But again, it gets back then to sort of the local folks getting together and having that electric utility discussion again. Do we really want four sets of wires running down the street when it all pretty much does the same thing? Maybe we should just have one set of trucks running down the street when everybody's required to have the same thing. I kind of get that. So we used to all be responsible for our own trash back in the day when everybody had a garbage barrel out back and we'd burn the stuff. And or if you didn't have a trash can like where I grew up, it was not uncommon for somebody just come along at 3 o'clock in the morning and throw it in your yard. That happened frequently. Or like it actually happened in my street, I'd take the trash out in the morning and shortly somebody'd show up and drop more trash in my can because I was paying the monthly bill and they were having a hard time and just couldn't pay the bill. Is that fair? Well, probably not, but at least they weren't throwing it in my yard. I did appreciate that. So and I say all that to say this. In the cities, we've given the city public utilities a little more authority than the rural municipal co-ops in the electric world anyhow. So when cities annex and expand like my city does, they can actually petition to take existing territory where a cooperative already serves. Now there is a carefully orchestrated dance that happens so that value is assigned to the property that's being taken and a price is arrived at. And they actually acquire that service territory, so we don't end up building a second set of power lines down the highway. And I'm wondering, as this bill proceeds, if you can consider something like that, rather than going the inverse condemnation route, and I appreciate you tamping that down with the amendment this morning, but since we, previous legislature, have already mandated the service, and I think wisely pushed it down to the lowest level of government responsible, is there a way we can develop language that would encourage or set in process, in motion a process where if a city does want to go from open contracts, that there is a compensation for that without having to go into the court system? That would be my encouragement to you. And I'm going to vote to send your amended bill out of here this morning. I know you have a couple more stops, the next one being civil law, which I think is a great place to have that discussion on how we can keep it away from lawyers, and I get it that lawyers are people too, but that if we could have some sort of a process like we've already... they used to be people, right, okay. So, Madam Chair, I guess those are my thoughts for the author and for this committee as we listen to the discussion this morning, and I just leave it at that.
Representative Stensrud, if you could answer briefly.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Beard. Yeah, the intention of this bill is always just to have some sort of fair compensation if a local city... displaces a vendor. So I would be happy to have those discussions and consider those things.
Good, thanks.
Okay. All right, do we have any other questions before we move to a vote here? Okay, seeing no other questions, I'll renew my motion that House File 2084 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to civil law.
Roll call, Madam Chair.
Roll call. Roll calling having been requested, there will be a roll call.
Representative Pepin?
Aye.
Representative Murray?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Beard?
Aye.
Representative Green?
No.
Representative Hancock?
Aye.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative McFarland?
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Representative Simon?
No.
Representative Quam?
See.
Representative Scalzi?
No.
Representative Winkler?
No.
There being 8 ayes and 6 nays, the motion does prevail in House file.
Madam Chair.
2084 is recommended.
My name was not called for the roll.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I apologize.
I don't know what the, whatever, I don't know how it plays out, but.
Representative Sanders, I apologize. I accidentally missed you. I apologize. Representative Sanders.
I vote aye.
Okay. The number mysteriously doesn't change, however. There being 8 ayes and 6 nays. The motion does prevail, and House File 2084 is recommended to pass as amended.
Government operations.
You were counted, right?
Okay, we're going to move on to House File 2455, Representative Grunhagen. Welcome to the committee, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Murray will move your bill for you.
Madam Chair, I would move House File 2455 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
So move to your bill, Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and also members. House File 2455 is a specialty bill that addresses a difficulty I have in my current district. It permits the City of Montgomery to convey for less than market value a specific parcel of property to the Montgomery American Legion Post 79. It requires the City to adopt a resolution to authorize the conveyance, requires the conveyance to prohibit the American Legion Post from conveying the property to another private property for up to 5 years, and permits the City to place other conditions or restrictions on the conveyance. And that's basically a brief summary of the bill. It only affects the City of Montgomery. There is a Senate file that addresses a broader aspect of this bill, but in discussion with the Senate, they want to work that out in conference committee.
Do you have any witnesses that need to address us?
No, I do have a letter from the mayor of Montgomery that I can bring some perspective if somebody has a question.
Okay, is there anybody that needs to testify for or against the bill? Any questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Murray, would you like to renew your motion?
I do renew my motion, Madam Chair.
Representative Murray renews his motion on House File 2455 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. And then I think we'll move on next to House File 2545 Sanders, because I believe that's a two-word bill. Is there an amendment?
Yeah.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm not sure what the motion would be on this. I don't know where it's going next.
I think just to the General Register.
Okay. Then, Madam Chair, I'll move the House File 2545 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. There is an amendment floating around. I want to just apologize. It did not meet the 24-hour rule. But in working with the Secretary of State and the Revisor's Office, this came down to us just last night. So if the committee will indulge, it's just a better way to do what we're trying to do here. So if, I don't know if Representative Nelson, Simon, Madam Chair, if you guys kind of agree, we'll move forward if that's okay.
Representative Nelson?
First time I've seen this, Madam Chair. It seems to be technical, so I guess I'm not going to object to it, although I do have some questions about the amendment.
Okay, maybe Mr. Gehring could explain the amendment a little bit, and I don't want to just vote on it if anyone has any questions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the amendment does two things. One is it deletes an additional reference that's currently in statute related to the date requirement. So the two words that are removed from the bill as introduced remove the requirement that a voter date their signature when submitting their absentee ballot. But there is also a reference to the date in the actual oath that they're signing, so the amendment would take out the additional language that refers to the date being provided. The amendment also adds an effective date of June 29th, 2012, which is the first day for absentee voting for the 2012 state primary.
Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe Mr. Gehring can answer this. The effective date, I don't have a question about that. That seems very technical. My question has to do about deleting the whole line, my signature and date below indicate I have completed this document. Does that then take out the requirement to have to sign it, other than just if, or can we accomplish the same thing just by eliminating the end date and leave the my signature below indicates that I have completed this document? Because otherwise, are we taking that part out of the law?
Mr. Gehring?
It seems like we're taking more out than we need to take out to eliminate the date part.
I could also ask Ms. Frazier, too.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I think I would defer to Ms. Frazier on that question.
Ms. Frazier, if you could answer the question, but please do remember to identify yourself for the tape first.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. Representative Nelson, it does not remove the requirement that the oath be signed. The language on 1.22 requires that it be signed, as will the administrative rules that dictate the layout of the form.
That answers my question, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that we're not taking out more than we needed to if we're just trying to eliminate the date. That was my question.
Does anyone else have any concerns with the amendments since this is a first chance we've had to see it, but although it does seem mostly technical? Okay, seeing no questions or concerns, let's first vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Then back to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Committee, for your indulgence on the amendment. And we virtually have discussed the bill already with the amendment. But just real briefly, what this bill does is remove the statutory requirement that military and overseas voters not only sign but also date the outside of their absentee ballot envelope. We ran into scenarios where there was confusion over whether or not it was dated correctly. Perhaps it was not dated at all. Those absentee ballots were sent back, and a significant portion of those voters were not able to then resubmit another ballot absentee in time for the vote to count. So we want to try and rectify that problem as much as we can by at least removing the date portion. Since ballots are only available during a defined period of time, and they all have to be received by election day for them to count anyway, so there is already a date parameter established for all the absentee ballots. Ms. Frazier with the Secretary of State's office is up here if there are any questions for her specifically. But that is what the bill is.
Thank you. It's pretty straightforward. Are there any questions? Seeing none, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will renew my motion that House File 2545 be recommended to pass as amended and be sent to the General Register.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail, and we will start House File 1977 and see how far we get. I'm not sure how many people are interested in testifying. Representative Rasmussen, I'm going to have Representative Murray move this for you. Representative
Madam
Murray.
Madam Chair, I would move House File 1977 be recommended to pass and move to State Government Finance.
To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Murray and members.
Members, this bill would basically, it's basically permissive language. It's very short. You can read it. Provides, it's permissive language. It provides asks the MMB commissioner, gives them the ability to enter into negotiations, ad hoc negotiations with the union to move towards an unpaid leave or reduction in hours scenario versus layoffs in those situations where layoffs become a necessary item given the circumstances. And members and Madam Chair, there is an amendment as well.
Okay, the A1 amendment.
Madam Chair, I would move the A1 amendment.
Representative Murray moves the A1 amendment to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Murray. This amendment actually broadens the scope of the bill from what it was. It was actually drafted to only adhere to situations where a collective bargaining agreement or an initiation of one would bring about circumstances that provided for layoffs. This one says you know, basically whenever a situation arises that both parties could sit down and talk about looking at unpaid leave and reduction in hours versus layoffs. Members, this brings clarity to the ability of MMB to negotiate these contract amendments. Some may argue that that there's already the ability to do that under 179A.07, but it would signal the legislature's intent for the commissioner to initiate discussions in these scenarios where this situation presents itself. It would help maintain jobs in tight budget situations and bring forward a situation where people wouldn't lose their job and could hang on to their jobs into the future. It has a potential to save taxpayers money because when we do have layoffs, it costs money. Up to $28,000 per job is what the fiscal note suggests. And this would not require, if these types of agreements were to come to fruition, Madam Chair, that would not require the legislature or the subcommittee of employee relations to approve of them. I understand it could be accomplished simply through an MOU. That's the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. If it would be all right, I'd like to adopt the A1 amendment since that is the shape the author would like first, and then we can open up for questions. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Now we'll open up for questions to the bill. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if there's anybody here from the affected bargaining units that would like to speak for or against this bill. I don't see anybody here. But
is there anyone here who would like to? Oh, we have someone. Mr. Pajewski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Richard Kajewski, the Public Affairs and Communications Director for MAPE. Madam Chair, the bill is what Representative Druskowski described. It is a permissible bill. I would only state that what is being permissible in the bill is already permitted during the collective bargaining process today. All those provisions in one shape or form exist in our collective bargaining agreements, and I can speak on behalf of MAPE and AFSCME. We have various provisions in our contract that deal specifically with the unpaid leave and some administrative leaves as well that do produce cost savings. There's been legislation in the past that has addressed that as well. There's nothing that prevents the commissioner from management and budget from trying to negotiate this with any of the labor unions. It doesn't require us to accept any specific provision during that process, but they certainly could come to the table and negotiate that nobody can chew gum in the state agencies on Fridays. There's nothing that prevents them from bringing any particular proposal to the table. So with that, I mean, we don't like having collective bargaining agreements or provisions of those prescribed to us in statute. We don't think that the state statute should impede on Minnesota Statute 179A that prescribes what we do in the collective bargaining process, and we're conflicted with that. But this bill simply is something that exists today. So.
Thank you. Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that answers my question. To me, then, it would seem like it's an unnecessary bill, but I don't see any great harm to it. But that's what I'm hearing from the union representatives. So, but I don't see a real need for it.
Do you want to comment, Representative Raskowski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, you know, I think the value in this is that it would signal to the agency from the legislature in the future that the legislature would like the agencies to consider sitting down and negotiating with the unions when these situations arise, to encourage them to engage those discussions to see if there is the opportunity to do it. Simply a signal from the legislature that that's the intent is for us to focus on, if we can in the negotiation, focus on unpaid leave versus layoffs.
Madam.
Mr. Kaczynski.
Madam Chair, members, the only thing I would caution all of you in this bill is that urging them to negotiate for unpaid leaves, even if a certain group of employees, in fact, the CAP board went to part-time hours instead of laying people off several years ago when their budgets were cut. So that's one example in state government. But when you urge these unpaid leaves, there can be grave consequences, which is exactly what happened during the Plenty administration. He tried to negotiate furloughs for all state employees with all the collective bargaining agreements. And, you know, call it an unpaid leave, call it a furlough, call it what you want. There is a huge, huge cost to implement unpaid leaves in state government. There is consequences because of the federal funds that flow into Minnesota, and it is very, very costly. The federal government has, and there is a memo, I certainly can supply it to the committee, I'd have to go back and get and make copies, but there's a memo that went out that the proposal that Governor Plenty had on the table at the time, which, I, if my memory serves me correct, was 40 hours of unpaid leave for all state government employees through an entire year. It was too costly to even implement that. The savings would not have saved the state anything. It actually would have cost the state money to do that, just because of the federal money and the consequences of it, that money flowing into the state. So I would just remind members of that.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Murray?
Madam Chair, I'd renew my motion that House File 1977 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay?
No.
Motion does prevail. And with that, meeting is adjourned until tomorrow.